Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
The Athletic.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
And tame again.
Crank up the music! Charge your glass! This nation is going to dance all night!
The myth of Monday night football demolished by Mickey Marsh 69, Gareth Bale and the most offensively dull interview of all time, Steve Bruce just taking his Steve Bruce-ness too far, the first official I fear for them I really do of the season, pedantic kit men, inevitable Premier League scorelines, specialist coaches that football hasn't realised it needs yet, and every League 2 Soccer Saturday roving reporter update ever. Brought to your ears by The Athletic, this is Football Clichés. Right now you can subscribe to The Athletic for just £3.49 a month. That's 30% off the full price of a subscription. You'll enjoy great analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all of our podcasts. So go to theathletic.com/clichéspod to take advantage of this special discount. That's theathletic.com/clichéspod. Hello everyone, and welcome to episode 88 of the Football Clichés podcast. I am Adam Hurry, and with me first of all, David Walker. You are no doubt familiar, Dave, with the greatest genre of footballing photograph of all, which is the angry fans behind opposition, probably away player, the latest edition of which was from the Emirates. Probably a good fan base to choose for this particular genre. My question to you is, after having taken in the glory of this photo and all the facial expressions and all the hand gestures and everything, if you could put yourself in that mode, in that scenario, what's your default thing? If you were caught in that photo, what are you going to be caught doing? You can be as offensive as you like. You can be as angry as you like, but I want to know what's the first thing that would come into your head in that scenario.
I think my instinct would be, it would just be a sort of, not vitriolic, but sort of resigned, oh, fuck off.
Right.
Oh, give it a rest, all right. You know, I'm not angry at him. I'm not spitting bile. I'm just sort of a bit, God, leave it out, mate. Come on.
So you'd be caught sort of mid-F, wouldn't you, with your hands sort of flailing?
Yeah.
But not necessarily directly abusive. That's fine. No. That's a good answer, actually. It's a good answer. I think personally I would be more... I'd be more the sort of silent types, the sort of standing there with their arms crossed going, you... But in their heads, just going, you... But also angry at my own team for having got themselves into that situation. So stood there... defiant in a way, but also resigned to my fate. Equally resigned to his fate, alongside you is Nick Miller. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well, actually. I thought myself as quite sprightly, full of energy for the new season. How about you? You're still very much up for this.
Yeah, I went to my first game, proper game, in, you know, since the badness started. Well, game with fans, and you know, it was a bit of a sensory overload, but I discovered that my enthusiasm for it does kind of transcend early trains and, you know, poor train station food and so on, you know, the really tough life of a traveling football journalist.
Well, it's good to know that your energy levels are still high. The same perhaps cannot be said emotionally for the BBC's Jonathan Pearce. This is an odd few seconds from the Match of the Day 2 highlights of Arsenal versus Chelsea.
The sunshine days of summer, European Championship football, the Olympics. Oh, but a memory. The rain sweeps in, September is coming, the nights are drawing in. It's lovely to be cheery on a Sunday afternoon. A little long for Martinelli.
Just flick straight back into the action. But Nick, what's your favourite little bit of that? I think it's the sigh, personally.
Yeah, I think it's the little pause straight after he finishes, where you almost think he's going to say, and of course, one day the sun will explode and we'll all die, so what's the point of this all anyway?
Dave, are you surprised that actually made it into the final edit?
I like to think that the producers of Match of the Day 2 are on our wavelength and thought, no, we'll keep that in, that's
yeah.
Nice.
Classic Pierce. It's also, it's such a nondescript passage of play by the looks of things as well. So it doesn't look like they needed to leave that in. I'm always, when you think of Jonathan Pearce, you it feels like you should think of his classic days where he was screaming and the Cantona thing. But I always now go to the Women's World Cup in 2016, 2017, around then, when he went on an extended riff about the price of wet wipes in Canada. And it was one of the most surreal sort of passages of commentary I've ever heard. But obviously extremely memorable.
Well, that's the tipping point for me. We need to get him on as a Harlan Dicks, Dave. Let's do everything we can. Get our contacts books together,
yes.
Including mine, and see if we can get him on, because I think he'd be solid gold. Okay, so a few quickfire matters for the adjudication panel this week to kick us off. Dave, Monday Night Football returned this week. Sky making a justifiably big deal of Carragher and Neville being back together in the studio. It's a very spectacular social media graphic they put out. My heart was so warmed by basically the first reply that came up on Twitter when I opened this tweet, which is from, and this is the name of a person who sounds like they have no patience for Monday Night Football whatsoever. It was Mickey Marsh 69. It's the one I've made up, but I honestly haven't. And his reply to Sky Sports was, "Any chance of covering the actual game tonight, lads, rather than a whole hour of waffling about other teams?" Perfect. Just completely undermining the whole USP of Monday Night Football there. I really like that. Just love it.
And I saw that Carragher replied to him as well. So that's nice. The Carragher has actually seen that after he's been slaving away over the highlights all morning.
Nick, it makes me wonder what he says about other programmes. Antiques Roadshow. Can you just skip past all the old stuff and just get to the theme tune at the end? That'd be really great.
Skip past the bollocks about the heartfelt nostalgic stories of how you used to, use this vase as a small child, and then get straight to the valuation.
But I'll be watching. But as always, I'll be tuning in just before kickoff because I want to watch the first bit. I might stick around for the post-match analysis, though. That's fun too. Equally mesmerising content this weekend, Nick, in the form of a frankly astonishingly dull Gareth Bale interview with The Guardian, to the point where I wonder what the point of it was. Let's just have it in front of us. My first prevailing thought after I'd finished reading it, and I was amazed I got through it, was, what is the point of this? It wasn't overtly selling anything. It wasn't it wasn't a tie-in with anything obvious.
Well, you say that. I've just read it for the second time. I think that's exactly what it is.
But
in the opening paragraph, it points out that he is the co-founder of Robots Gyms.
Yes.
As in rowing machine.
Yeah.
Rowing. And he mentions that his most treasured possession is a rowing machine.
Yeah. So that's question two. So that's question, what is your most treasured possession? My rowing machine. Okay, so that's it. Commercial obligations taken care of. Where can this interview go from here? Nick, how deep does this go?
Well, I mean, I was kind of slightly disappointed that there wasn't more golf in there. I thought that, if he had a little bit more self-awareness, he'd really ham up the golf. Although he does say he was watching the PDA Tour until late at night, so maybe that's the kind of trolling of Real Madrid, but, saying that even when he's not playing golf, he's wasting his time, and going to bed later than he should have done just to watch the golf.
Not even a hint of tongue-in-cheek.
But I bet that's like he's staying up to 11 watching PDA Tour.
in a hyperbaric chamber.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a hint of perfectionism that goes all the way through, but when I'm looking for the biggest ratio in this interview between promising question and deadpan answer that offers absolutely nothing, I would perhaps go, Dave, with, if you could edit your past, what would you change? Nothing. Without my past, I wouldn't be who I am today. In some ways, true.
For that, I would go with, who would you want to play you in a film of your life? The answer, I wouldn't want anyone else to play me.
That's it.
Does it mean that he wants to play himself in said film? Or doesn't want the film to happen?
No, the latter, definitely. Yeah, he doesn't want a film to be made about him. Because he shuns the limelight, does Gareth. Shuns it so harshly that he couldn't be bothered to do this interview by the looks of it.
I was quite struck by the first question, which is, what is your greatest fear? And the answer to that was not being the best version of myself in football and in life. So he must have been very frightened for the last few years. He's very obviously not been the best version of himself for quite a while.
It's very strong, but it doesn't, for me, it's not the high point of this particular genre, which was a few years ago, Gerard Deulofeu. He was asked the age-old question, which three people would you like to have round for dinner? The age-old, you know, fancy dinner party question.
Yep.
And his answer was the actor Jason Statham and Ronaldinho. Just those two.
We're guaranteed to now have people replying with, have you seen the one-on-one interview with Damien Delaney in the Crystal Palace match programme? Where he, if memory serves, he lists a series of historical dictators that he'd like to have dinner with. Which was, you know, unexpected, but a refreshing change of gear for that sort of thing. But fundamentally a really odd thing to read.
Presumably Wayne Hennessy read that interview and was completely perplexed by his answers.
Oh, God. Did we not learn from Stefan Posner? Stop this, this lurid inference of things.
I think
anyway.
The last one on this interview with Gareth Bale, though, I think the nadir of it, really, is, what is your favourite word? A very open-ended question.
That interrupts the question, but still.
Yeah. He says, I prefer a phrase. It's time, ... to # switch on.
Oh.
It's amazing how only a few words can say so much. Whenever I hear that phrase, I know it's time to put on my game face. It's rubbish.
Where is he hearing it and seeing it?
Why is it typed to the # though?
Is this some kind of marketing # for his robot or whatever it is?
Maybe we've overlooked this, yeah. That would make
sense. It's so subtle. Having a # in a printed article doesn't work, but that's not the point.
We'll never know if he said the # out loud. We'll never know, but I assume he did. I want to stay on the theme of mundane football talkers, Dave. I have had it with Steve Bruce. I know he's a nice guy. I know he's avuncular and all that sort of stuff, but I have had it with the way that he talks about football in this kind of vague, accepted wisdom kind of way, and is just allowed to do it. Here's a very pertinent example of this.
That's the VAR comes into equation. You know, we're supposed to be to get back into the game. You know, you're not supposed to be offside by a toenail or whatever it's supposed to be. We didn't see any of that in the Euros, and that's what we're supposed to be copying. If the lines aren't by the side of each other, I don't know what is. If there's, so I feel a bit aggrieved because we're talking about VAR again, which is disappointing.
Is it because there isn't maybe the consistency that you feel
correct.
There should be?
Well, last week we didn't see any lines drawn. You know, that wasn't supposed to be. It was supposed to be bearing on the mind of the forward player that was it. Then all of a sudden we're drawn lines with armpits again. So I believe.
Dave, he just can't be asked. He can't be asked, can he? He can't be asked to work out or find out how VAR works and how it's supposed to work this season. And it's his job to know, and he can't be asked. That's basically the summary of this, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. I just love, we're drawing lines with armpits.
Yeah, yeah. Because you can just say those words now and you know that a small section of people go, yeah, absolutely right, Brucey, absolutely
right. Toenails.
Bullshit.
Toes, fine. Toenails, no. Doesn't
but
work.
He's just done that thing where he's turned something that people kind of say in, or you know, say down the pub, and he's then turned that into official like FA policy in his head. Like, is it, we're not supposed to be doing the armpits thing anymore? And where's he got that from? It's yeah, as you say, lazy.
Yeah, I find it quite infuriating. I think my theory now is, Dave, that managers get past a certain age. I'm not saying this is necessarily an age thing, maybe it's more an experience thing. You get past a certain point in a managerial career where you basically don't really have to say anything of note. the interviews don't become particularly important. You're not building a reputation anymore. So basically, you're stuck in the same mode that I can only describe as Friday afternoon Sky Sports News round the manager's questions, where you can just talk about things in a kind of high-level kind of way. You know, well, social media, I mean, obviously, I'd steer clear of it, and I hope the players will steer clear of social media, because we know there's upsides and we know there's downsides as well. And you're just talking about things like that, basically, with no detail, no specifics, just general. Flaff is a word, with an A. Yeah, flaff.
Was it not him that complimented social media for finding his dog or something?
Oh, well, yeah, okay, yeah, him? I will give him that. Yes, I will give him that. That was a light-hearted moment. That was nice. But yeah, fundamentally sick of Steve Bruce, actually, for the first time in my life.
There is a part of me that sympathises with him, because in a way, I bet even Steve Bruce is probably a bit sick of Steve Bruce. Like, he has just been doing the same thing for such a long time.
Yeah.
And it's basically, even though he's at the biggest club that he'll ever have been in charge of at Newcastle, they are basically in the same situation that basically all the other clubs he's ever managed are. Sort of lingering about the Premier League, not being that good, having the occasional moment, but there's just a weariness about it all. And yes, I think that he's just stuck in that loop forever.
Maybe I'm coming around for a bit of sympathy here, Nick, because, you know, if after 20 years of being asked, feel a bit hard done by today, Steve? you're going to run out of the spirit to answer that question, aren't you?
Yeah, there's quite a when will I be free to resume my literary career vibe about you know, about him. He's just, you know, tired of the whole grind.
Yeah, absolutely. Steve Bruce, up your game, or you'll be on this podcast again very soon. Next up, first of all, the first point I want to make about this following clip, Dave, is that the background music is so in-house club social media. So I'll let that dwell on for a second. This is from listener Dark Side Driver, who pointed me in the direction of Wolves' opening day of the season content, part of which was a little interview with their groundsman about how he prepares the pitch. And I want you both to listen to this clip, because there's going to be a point where the inevitable happens and he slips into one of the most enduring football speak habits.
So important this day and age, the type of football teams play, that it's imperative that we do have a good pitch. And obviously you want that good pitch all season really. Obviously you need to try and get through the winter months, the Januaries and Februaries, where fixtures pile up and obviously the weather is against you a little bit, but the Premier League pitches are second to none really.
Dave, where do you stand on the pluralising of the Januaries and Februaries?
Yeah, he could only have topped it by saying the Januaries and Februaries of this world.
Or your Januaries and your Januaries.
Your
Februaries.
Januaries.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe this... I mean, we have to factor in, Nick, that groundsmen probably talk about this a lot. So, you know, the Januaries and Februaries are probably quite crucial to their profession. So maybe I shouldn't... I'm not sneering, of course. I'm just observing, but still.
No, I mean, as he said, in this day and age, everyone needs a good pitch. But it has ruined the absolutely classic, like, opening day of the season. I don't know whether you could even call it banter, but just kind of standard remark of, doesn't the pitch look good? The pitch looks... it's green. There's no big kind of mud through the middle. It's, you know, the symbol of fresh hope. A new season is here. This might be our year. But now pitches look like that all season, so it's no, you can't really remark upon it anymore. So you're doing too good a job, groundsman around the country.
To the point where it's probably the more remarkable thing now, as you say, is that is the pitch a bit bobbly today? Kind of ball's moving a bit slow, isn't it?
Yeah.
The grass is a couple of millimetres too long.
I think that's the only time I want to hear from groundspeople is when the pitch is rubbish. I don't want to hear them explain it. Other than that, we know now. You've done a very, very good job with your Deso surface, artificial woven fibres.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
First official instance in 2021-22, Nick, of a phrase very dear to my heart. Here's Graeme Souness before, just ahead of Southampton versus Manchester United on Sunday afternoon.
They could find themselves in trouble this year. You've sold Ings, top goal scorer last year with 12 goals. You had the second worst defensive record in the Premier League last year. Only West Brom were worse. And that's a bad combination.
And you've lost Vestergaard and Bertrand as well.
It's a bad combination. I mean, I fear for them. I really do.
Great delivery of it, isn't it? Everything about it is perfect.
You can't just say, I fear for them. You have to say, I fear for them. I really do.
I really do. You know, my concern is genuine. I really do.
He needn't have worried. Mm. They were fine. Should have won.
They'll be fine. Are they now? They'll be fine. I think they are.
I think after that performance, when they should really have won the game, I think you can... I had Southampton as one of the teams that I thought might be worse than Watford.
Right.
Now, not anymore. They've rocketed up my estimations table.
Southampton, a rare beast. They may well complete the you fear for them and they'll be fine double within the space of 48 hours, which is frankly sensational. But such is the knee-jerk existence of the Premier League that one result may turn you into a they'll be fine. But yeah, in summary, textbook delivery from Souness, and I was really happy with it. Next up, evidence perhaps, Nick, that the Football Cliches adjudication panel is bleeding into wider culture. West Brom's apparently quite outspoken kit man, Pat Frost, which is a great name, isn't it?
If I could interrupt here and say I'm not happy with the phrase outspoken kit.
You shouldn't be one, should you? But no, he's the only Premier League kit man who has a large Twitter following from what I can see. He's also the England kit man, I should add, so that adds him some kudos.
That's weird, isn't it? Like, why? What? How did he get that job?
I know a guy who folds it really well.
so perfect every time.
He's local near St George's Park.
Yeah, Hodgson clearly got him in, the West Brom connections, didn't he? Do you think he'll ever, I don't know, do you think he'll go England only, or does he miss the day-to-day buzz of club kit?
He provides the day-to-day buzz.
Of course, then,
he is the day-to-day buzz.
Yeah, and then sort of later on he'll have to retire from international kit manning to extend his domestic career, because the hands get tired. Don't know, the iron. No. Anyway, he wasn't busy enough, despite all those duties, Nick, on Saturday, because he had his eye on the BBC live text reporting from the Championship, and it went as follows. What a start for West Brom. Alex Mowat gets the visitors off the mark within a minute, and it's a nightmare start for Blackburn. Mowat gets on the end of a frantic scramble of shots in the box to poke home, and the league leaders are flying. Kitman Pat was not happy with poke home. This is what he tweeted. Poke home, four laughing emojis. The lad scores a contender for goal of the season, and it's described as a poke home. Surely you've got more things on your mind on a Saturday afternoon, packing the kit away into those massive trunks.
Actually, I'm back on his side now, because he's absolutely right. That was no way that goal was a poke home. I think it sort of will reignite the classic volley, half-volley question, but it was an absolute screamer from the edge of the area. So no pokes involved.
No pokes involved, indeed. But, I mean... accurate pedantry aside, Dave, this is a great moment for this podcast, isn't it? It's a great moment. I feel like this wouldn't have happened without us.
Can we get Kit Mad Pat on?
Yeah, I reckon we could. He's often a source of insight, let's put it that way. So yeah, hopefully we can get Kit Mad Pat on. We'd have to ask him about Kit, though, in the same way that when we get commentators on, the impulse is to ask them about, well, what's it like on the... What about your commentary notes? But no, we can't do that. So we'll have to ask him. We get him on, but ask him a single question about kit.
Have you ever forgotten the kit?
And then we'd have to talk about Chelsea at Coventry. We would. Yeah. Any horror stories? Oh, God.
On the subject of kits, did we see Arsenal were at it again? Brent Leno was wearing the away kit in goal. What is that about? There's no reason for it. But they don't, and it's not a clash thing. They're allowed to do it, so they've done it.
I was surprised to, or disappointed to discover that no one told Roy Keane about it. Mm. The stick he would beat them with. I mean, he doesn't need any... I mean,
can you imagine like Peter Schmeichel in an United away kit? Imagine how ludicrous that would look.
Well, this feeds back into the pitches thing, because presumably in days of yore, that's why your goalkeeper kits had those massive pads on the shoulders. But now these, you know, beautiful... soft pitches are just fine to fling yourself around on and, you know, graze your elbows or whatever.
I think we're getting too technical here. I fundamentally think that it's just too Bob of the Premier League to allow it to happen. You should wear a goalkeeper shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. What is this? Yeah, what's going on here? The brand. Think of the brand. Not happy with that. Moving on to what I can only describe, Nick. I mean, you were at this game as the Hansard of football chants. There is a point at which reporting on what the fans are singing, I mean, given the current context, I'm happy to allow this. I would allow it anyway, but I'm very interested in it. There's a point at which reporting what the fans are saying gets a little bit too much. This is from Football London's Alistair Gold, who transcribed the entire exchange between the Wolves and Tottenham fans at Molineux. I'll read it out in full. But there's a point at which it starts to kind of lose its appeal. I don't know why. Anyway, here goes. The Wolves fans sing, "Harry Kane, he wants to fuck off." Spurs supporters reply that he's one of their own. Once he's on, Wolves fans chant, "There's only one greedy bastard," and "He'll be a mank in the morning." The Spurs fans retort, "Harry Kane, he's worth more than Wolves." Retort doing a good job there, I think, Nick.
I mentioned it in my article, but I stopped at "Harry Kane, he wants to fuck off." It was an interesting dynamic there yesterday, because it felt like, obviously Harry Kane was on the bench, and it felt like there was absolutely nothing that I could tell from Spurs fans until he sort of emerged to be brought on. So it was like they were just so sick of the whole thing and just wanted to ignore it. And then when he emerged, it was like there was a collective sigh, and like all right, well, we can do one or two things here. let's just be positive, we're winning, it's fine.
It's a tricky tightrope here on a technical level though, Dave, because I mean, I sympathize with wanting to report what the fans are singing, especially right now, but I suppose it's all or nothing. Like, you'd have to do the whole exchange, wouldn't you? But so I feel like the first one and the response should be the only thing you should say. After that, it gets weird.
I don't know whether this is just the way it's written, but did it all happen in literally back to back, or is this over the whole second half or something?
It did. Right. I will. Once the only small quibble I have with Alistair's reporting of events was that Harry Kane, he's one of our own, happened first, and then came Harry Kane, he wants to fuck off from the Wolves fans. But it was bang, 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 back and forth. It was great banter.
I've got an issue with this, the chants that they're using, that the Spurs fans obviously use for Kane and the Wolves fans have adapted. It doesn't scan. Harry Kane doesn't fit. "He's one of our own, he's one of our own. Harry Kane."
Yeah, this does feel like something you get annoyed about more than anybody else in this podcast.
Doesn't work.
Definitely.
Do a different one.
Yeah. It's a difficult name, I think, for a chant. I mean, if you've got to try and force a syllable into Harry, you know, a third
or Kane.
Syllable.
Yeah, there's only three syllables in the whole name. Yeah.
Not good for his branding. Don't think he's thought about that.
Maybe if he was called Adam Hurry, it would fit perfectly.
Good, solid four-syllable name. You can do a lot with that. That's true. Next bit, a thoroughly enjoyable aspect of clichés generally, but I'm happy to bring it up again. Elliot the Kid writes in and says, "Adjudication needed, Dave. Rob McCaffrey has just described Mustafa Carriol's goal for Gillingham as being absolutely lashed into the top left-hand bedroom. I'm not having this. Are you having this?"
Lashed to the top left-hand bedroom? Never had anything like it in my life.
That's not particularly evocative, is it, Nick?
Is he trying to sort of create his own top bins kind of thing?
Yeah.
Here, and he desperately trying to increase his own brand. What doesn't it make sense? What? I mean, top bins doesn't really make any sense either, but that's part of the vernacular now. There's not a huge amount we can do about that. But top bedrooms, I don't understand.
Well, you mean you've opened a different can of worms, which is that Rob McCaffrey was trying to develop his brand. I feel like he might be 20 years too late for that. It seems strange when you see a Rob McCaffrey sort of reporting from a game like that. So how does that come about? Strange. I thought it'd be on MUTV or something like that. But elsewhere on Soccer Saturday, Dave, it was really reassuring to hear at least one of their roving reporters having to deliver his update by phone, or as Jeff Stelling put it, from the moon. it's just nice. It's kind of visceral to know that, you know, they're just out and about in a cramped little press box somewhere and they have to do it by phone. That's fine, and it doesn't ruin the watching experience, because we're happy with that. It's reporting from the field.
Yeah, you know, it is nice, and it's definitely part of the sort of Soccer Saturday tapestry. Quite evocative, but it is mad that in this day and age that it still happens. Like, basically no one should ever need to use a phone line ever again. If the pandemic's taught us one thing, it's that everything can be done via over the internet in a decent quality, decent-ish quality connection. Surely you could, like, voice note it when it's not live.
We're talking about League 2 Wi-Fi here, aren't we? This is the issue. Yeah, you have to factor
that. It sounds like they're on a dodgy old landline.
I think they do it deliberately. I think they do it deliberately. Just a little bit of kind of just, you know, authenticity, Nick.
Like when people inevitably say during tournaments, "Oh, this is great, but it's a shame it's not like doesn't look like Mexico 1970, exactly. And it's kind of, you know, down a fuzzy line.
Yeah,
or something,
the commentary is too good quality and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
It did get me thinking, though, Nick. You may remember a hit football cliche segment, every Football League goals roundup ever. I did wonder, start to wonder about the vital ingredient of a roving reporter update down the line from League Two on Soccer Saturday. So we asked our listeners what the vital ingredients of this should be. Gaz Meek says it's important to include how many hours it's been since a team scored or conceded. Good, solid option. Nice bit of colour. Sean Rapson, love this, Sean Rapson. Not quite seeing who got the final touch for a goal. Love that. Definitely. Jake says...
Which is always undermined by the video printer underneath it saying exactly who scored, and they're going, I didn't quite see it, Jeff. And then at the bottom it says, you know, Will Grigg or whatever.
Jake says the 700-mile round trip will feel a lot longer for the away fans after that late goal. Yeah, so definitely the lower down you get, the more you should refer to the away fans, Dave, just because, you know, they're hardier souls down there, aren't they?
Yeah, typically involving in a way there at Carlisle, I think. It all revolves around that, doesn't it?
Yeah, completely. Final suggestion here from Sam. Roving reporter updates after a goal should all have to be timed perfectly so that they coincide with the Tannoy announcer naming the goal scorer. Love it when we get one of those. The best answer to the but which way has it gone question. Well, as you can hear, Jeff. Very good. So, yeah, all of those I will bear in mind, because at the end of this episode, I'm going to attempt every League Two Soccer Saturday roving reporter update ever. By phone.
Are you going to have to phone me?
I was hoping you might be able to put a phone effect on it.
Well, we'll see.
Earn your money.
If you want proper authenticity.
I could do it over the phone. I definitely could do it over the phone. But yeah, everyone can look forward to that at the end of this episode. Tom Yates, Nick, says, is Manchester City 5, Norwich 0 the most inevitable result of any Premier League weekend? Man City seem to beat a lot of teams 5-0, funnily enough. Rhys Jones says Manchester City 5, Burnley 0 at the Etihad, every season without fail. Lewis agrees, seems to happen about 4 times a season, all at the Etihad. Any more spring to mind?
I mean, I don't know whether this is just recency bias because it happened literally yesterday, but Chelsea always seem to beat Arsenal 2-0. Yep, the Manchester City thrashing of the Minnows, it's always 5-0. Yeah.
There's always a back post tap in for Sterling. I realise this is a very well-documented Manchester City style thing, but this isn't a tactics podcast. The elements of a Man City 5-0 thrashing are always the same.
I think even Daniel Farker made note of this. He said two or three of the goals were identical.
So yeah, the fifth goal, Dave sort of met with a lot of pointing at the guy who set it up because they're so satisfied with their afternoon's work.
It's so uniform now that the players on the end of it don't even have to shoot. They're like Grealish's goal. He just has to stand there and it bounced off him and went in. Doesn't even have to actually do any football.
That's not a satisfying way to open your account for your club, is it, Dave? When it just goes in off you, because he didn't really... He obviously celebrated. Great moment, but not for the £100 million man.
There wasn't quite enough humility in the celebration for me either. There should have been a bit of a raised hand.
It's like, what's just happened? Nonsense. Pointing at his own hip, maybe. Someone polishing it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, it was complicated by the fact that I think it was the second goal of the game, wasn't it? So you have to celebrate with some gusto because it's still a, you know, fundamentally important goal. If it'd been the fifth, I think he would have stood there and sort of laughed to the point where it looked slightly disrespectful, but not quite. But yeah, every Manchester City 5-0 victory is the same.
I'd take 5-0 away at Man City now if you offered it to me as Watford, honestly. Because their last 11 games, I've just checked, my rough calculations, the aggregate score is 43-4. To Man City. One of those, of course, being their 6-0 in the FA Cup final. And then 2 months later in the league, they beat us 8-0.
God, what a depressing situation. I suppose you would take the 5-0, but no good goals. Like, they all had to be tapped into the back post, even if they're well worked. Yeah,
an own goal, they had on Saturday. Yeah.
Here are some other suggestions from our listeners for inevitable Premier League scorelines. Emil says, an inevitable scoreline seems to be an unlikely 1-0 win in the first home game with a club legend as caretaker, ideally around Christmas. Nick, this is such a vivid suggestion that I can even picture the body language of the manager in question at the final whistle. It's that kind of relieved pump of the arm saying, I'm turning this round. I needed to get this under my belt. Could be anybody.
And then, there's the relieved pump of the arms, and then they kind of go to celebrate with their players, and then they quickly remember their manager, so they go and have to turn around and go and shake hands with Mark Hughes or whoever it is.
I wonder which Southampton legend will be doing that in the St Mary's dugout in late December. Not Letitiae.
Jason Dodd?
Yes, Doddy. Yeah, very much so. Anyway, Jake says, Manchester United 0, Liverpool 0. That's pretty much a banker. Ollie T93 says Norwich 1, Burnley 1, with the score also being 1-1 at half time, seems completely inevitable this season. I mean, there's nothing to back that up, but he's described it so perfectly that I'm really happy with it. Nice little touch with the half time score. Dave, Ollie Max 741 says Southampton have been losing 3-0 away at West Ham since the dawn of time. Probably more for the real heads, that one.
You really would fear for them.
Yeah.
In that situation.
Yeah. Yeah, he's hit the tone just right. Again, another nicely structured one here. Travis Newton, Nick. Everton 0, Liverpool 2, in spite of the Toffees creating a number of good chances after going 1-0 down 10 minutes in. Mark off for calling them the Toffees, I have to say. But still does seem to be a match that happens every single year.
I'm specifically thinking of that Gary McAllister free kick. I can't remember if that game ended 2-0, but in my head it did.
Probably.
Liverpool absorb a lot of pressure, then score a wonder goal to make it 2-0.
Next up, I'm intrigued by the coverage, Dave, of the rise of specialist coaches in football. We've had a lot of chat about the throw-in coach at Brentford and Liverpool. There's a rise in set-piece coaches. Villa have got one. Very curious-looking guy. Doesn't look very football-y at all. But so he's their set-piece coach. And it emerged this weekend that AFC Wimbledon have a substitutions coach. He's the guy who kind of observes and says, right, now's the time. An ex-player who it dawned on him when he was being substituted on. They thought maybe there's a science behind this.
I'm really glad we're covering this, because I was getting very annoyed on Sunday. I was watching Match of the Day back on Sunday morning when Danny Murphy was on Saturday night.
And
it was mentioned, they made a big fuss about Aston Villa scoring, the goal that Danny Ings scored, and they put it down to this set-piece coach that you just mentioned. But basically, I mean, it was just a long throw and a flick on. I didn't see any spectacular movement or routine. It was literally all it was, just chuck it in, flick on, bang, in you go. But fine. But Danny Murphy was bristling at the mention of a set-piece coach. He said, in my day, it was just a job for a normal coach. But I mean, what do these people think is going on? It's not, these people have not been beamed here from another planet.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not a bloke who's gone through university and got an MBA in substitution coaching. It's just employing someone and saying your job is to look after this bit of what we do.
Yeah, you care about this more than anybody else. You figure it out. Yeah.
You know, we have, the Athletic has different writers for all the different teams and different sub-editors. This is your job. Yeah. It's just his job.
Yeah.
Think about this thing and make this thing work well for us. That's all it is.
Yeah.
But it's like this portrayed by people like that as just some newfangled thing.
Whenever you hear the way phrase newfangled, you know it's not going to go well. Newfangled.
It's ridiculous.
I'm intrigued by our developing enlightenment about this, Nick. These figures still seem to be presented as kind of studious opportunists who, as I say, have spotted something else that nobody else has, rather than sort of ex-pros who are just sort of, well, being shoehorned into a job. So these people who are taking their little mini roles seriously. But I was interested to see how far this could go. What are the precise situations in football that we might get a dedicated coach for? Where do you think the gap lies? Where do you think you could squeeze yourself in?
Well, I kind of wrote this down joking, but now I've almost convinced myself that this should actually be a thing. A coach's coach for coaches.
So they stand at the side at training telling...
Yeah, well, right. Because coaches, you know, almost inevitably former players, they go and do their badges in Wales a lot for some reason.
For some reason.
Which is how you could... You find out weirdly that Rob Earnshaw is really good mates with Andrea Pirlo or something like that, because they did their badges in some place near Swansea. Mm. But they go and do their badges and they get their UEFA A licence or whatever it is, and then they're just sort of cast into the University of Life.
Yeah.
Like it's almost a little bit like saying that footballers should only be coached up to under 19s, and then they're just kind of free to do with whatever they want. So I think there's legs in this.
Coaching.
I don't know who'd do it, but a coach is coach.
Yeah, where does it stop for session?
But then who coaches the coaches' coaches?
Come on, Dave, you're getting silly now. Come on.
Let's hand this over to our listeners. Dara White says a coin toss coach is a necessity in the modern game. I mean, I bet there's stats about heads or tails, Dave.
I mean, I feel like it should be a thing in cricket, at least, where it actually has a demonstrable effect on the game sometimes, I think. But why not?
No, agreed. Adam Crafton from The Athletic, Nick, says a penalty-saving coach. I don't want to release my inner Danny
sure
Murphy here, but that's part of the goalkeeper coach's job, I reckon.
Should
know
be.
That. shouldn't yeah. sure. a clue.
But you could have one. But you could keep subdividing. That this is the point. Like with the day and age that we're in, with football clubs having so much, relatively speaking, so much money, and the constant pursuit of excellence. Why not just get ease the workload?
Yeah.
Don't let one bloke do everything. Get four, divide it up so you can be better.
Exactly right. This is why I send the tweet out before we record, so that people do the work for us. It's great. Lots of mini little cliche coaches out there. Moving on, Baseman 93 and Jack Chesterman, Nick, both suggested a time-wasting coach. And, you know, as funny as this may seem, I think this is a good shout, because I find it so odd in the modern game, given how few stones are left unturned in the pursuit of victory, that there's so little scrutiny on how teams attempt to see a game out, especially in the last few seconds. Setting your team up to defend a lead, fine, but I'm talking about the last 60 seconds of a game where you desperately do not want to concede a goal. And how many teams just give the ball away because they just don't want to be seen to be doing anything else? The player will run it into the corner, fine, yes, and that's kind of a gesture. And then they'll just sort of let the possession go back to the other keeper. And I say, why would you do that? Surely you should be doing everything you can to keep hold of that ball by hook or by crook.
Maybe the way to actually get this into football itself is to, I don't know, broaden it or rebrand it as a game management coach. Because game management is obviously one of those phrases that is bandied around, but no one really knows what it actually means. What it means is things like, you know, wasting time and not being too ludicrously attacking. But yeah, it's things like the timing of when you start running the ball into the corner and shepherding it to, you know, I mean, the introduction of a coach to do this would ruin a lot of the football experience for my dad. He's one of his huge bugbears is when players do that too early. He goes apoplectic with rage when that happens.
Yeah, so, well, someone needs to guide these players into when to start doing it.
You should have, like in the NFL or whatever, when you have, there's special teams and special players that can do special things, like the kicking, the guys that come on and do the kicking and all that. Why? It could be the substitution coach could introduce a sub in the last minute who does nothing else but practice kicking it from his path to, with the perfect weight, to the opposite corner, where so it doesn't go out of play. The keeper still has to go and get it, and everyone can, you know, move up and give you some time.
100%.
It does annoy me when, again, Danny Murphy, Andy Gray, whoever it may be, is arguing about these things, and they're sort of going, oh, you know, there's all this marginal gains nonsense. It's not really the same as marginal gains, is it? Because these coaches are like actually working on fundamental parts of the game that you're playing. It's not the same as Dave Brailsford asking a cyclist to take a special pillow with them to the hotel.
I'm really glad I didn't say marginal gains at the start of this now, given how annoyed you've subsequently got. Yeah, okay, we'll leave it at that. Time-wasting coaches are needed. Alexander Gjedovic says specialist shithousery coach. Kind of encompasses by the same thing, I guess. Gaz Meek also says giving a sub-instructions coach. So, I don't know, overseeing the printing and the laminating, presumably, for that one. Someone else says a 21-man brawl coach. I feel that players have yet to truly perfect the fake headbutt that gets you sent off just the same as doing it properly. Yeah, that needs... Yeah, a coach to tell someone how to rile an opponent with physical violence, but only up to the point where you don't get sent off. So how hard you press your head into them without being deemed a headbutt. Finally, Dan Barnes of The Athletic also says Mark Hughes, Dave, could earn an absolute killing as a handshake etiquette coach. It would spare us a lot of drama every season.
I'm getting confused here. Is he the one that... Does he get annoyed at people not shaking his hand, or is he not shaking other people's hands?
No, he's the getting annoyed at not shaking his hand.
Right, yeah. Zealot. Okay, so that makes sense. Yeah, good shout.
Yeah, just quick cursory handshake of the opposition manager, win, lose or draw. Go for the member of staff you know best from your playing career, shake his hand. Anyone who gets in your way, give them a tap on the shoulder, exit. That's the technique.
Yeah, textbook. Absolutely textbook.
Well, I'm shaking your hands virtually. I want to round things off, as we now always do, with Premier League Year's Spotify playlist bingo. Nick, this may be new to you, I believe. Twitter user Mr. Wenger, of course, has created a playlist of every song ever played on Premier League Years. So all you have to do is give me a number between 1 and 1,375, and then we will talk about that song briefly in the context of Premier League Years.
I suppose the spirit of this is to randomly, but I am specifically thinking of one song which I'm trying to hit in terms. So I'm going to go with 159.
Interesting approach, interesting strategy. 159, Nick Miller says. I'm scrolling furiously up my Spotify, Oh, my goodness. Glory Box by Portishead.
Oh.
So we're talking sort of 93?
94, I think that was. 94, 95, around
that
then.
That makes sense. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So what Premier League scenario are we talking about here? Glory Box. I mean, it's quite a sad song.
Oh, it's this. I didn't know this was this. Okay.
It sounds like, I don't know, the start to a season montage, maybe? A club in crisis.
It feels like it's got sort of slow motion manager climbing into his car after being sacked. Written all over this, I think. Manchester City, maybe. I can picture Brian Houghton climbing into a, you know, Ford Sierra.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the title of the song, Dave, Glory Box, perhaps a misnomer here in Premier League context. We can ignore that. So it's just the vibe.
So.
Someone getting sacked. It sounds about right. Incidentally, I should point out that we are still awaiting that the author of this playlist and some helpful volunteers could create a spreadsheet of this, no less, that links every song to the incident in question. So we'll never have to wonder. Soon, once that spreadsheet is published and bought for a small fee, we'll never have to wonder about this anymore. But yeah, it's a very tender song, but it does have sacking written all over it. Premier League sacking. Good stuff. Well done. Well done, everybody. Cheers to you, Dave.
Thank you.
Cheers to you, Nick. Glad you enjoyed your first game of the season.
Thank you.
To play us out this week, this is, as promised, every League Two Soccer Saturday roving reporter update ever by phone.
That's right, Jeff. That's Team X's fans you can hear celebrating over to my left. The equaliser we thought was coming has arrived. The first goal Team Y have conceded in over 6 hours of football, and weirdly passive-aggressive manager Ray is absolutely furious. I couldn't quite see who got the final touch, but it's journeyman striker B who's claiming it. His fifth goal of the season, a long throw from grizzled player coach C from the right, the ball pinballed around the Team Y secure box for what seemed like an age, until journeyman striker B, who turned 36 on Thursday, doing what he so often does, took the ball away. The heavens have just opened here in vague English postal district, but those away fans who've travelled 600 odd miles for this one, some of them were up at 4 a.m, they won't care about that. Still 18 minutes to go here at charming 113-year-old Stadium Z, and it's game on! 1-1!
The Athletic.